It's 10 minutes to 7. This is On the Island. So you're boarding a plane, you're looking out for your seat and for who's sitting next to you. That was CBC producer Rosemary Westwood recently, and she brings us this timely chance encounter.
I like the window seat, even when I'm hemmed in by a lanky 6'4" American whose knees stick out a bit. It was an early November flight from Toronto to Vancouver, and my neighbor was Kevin Welch, a jovial 63-year-old from Portland, Maine, and a born storyteller. I learned even before the safety announcement that he was bound for Gabriola Island and that he fought in Vietnam. He pulled out a laptop. "I got photos," he told me. 10 days before Remembrance Day, he gave an impromptu slideshow on an airplane of 1969, when he was 19, one of tens of thousands of young Americans shipped to Vietnam.
Yeah, that was in Cameron Bay, I believe.
A photo of a sandy landscape with green hills and sea in the distance.
Yeah, that was Cameron Bay. I got sent to the 116th Combat Engineers when I first got there, and they were working on roads, and they were clearing a minefield of Bouncing Betties, M16A1 Bouncing Betties.
What's a Bouncing Betty?
Oh, it's dangerous. They bounce up and then they blow up.
Oh, it's like a type of bomb?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's, man.
Then a close-up of a young man with short dark hair fills the screen. Danny Danzig from Butler, Pennsylvania. He's the one who survived the tiger attack.
I was coming off of guard duty. We have four-man positions, and I told Howie, who was on guard after me, that I heard something.
Kevin crawled under a makeshift tent where Danny Danzig was already asleep.
And it wasn't a couple minutes later he started screaming, "Help me, help me." And the tiger had him by the leg and was hauling him away. So I had my M16 at him, but I didn't want to shoot him. And Kongaluski, our medic, had a flashlight. He shined the flashlight at the tiger. The tiger let go of him. That's how we rescued him.
In the next shot, barren trees covered in an orangey haze.
You can see what Agent Orange does. See, like, it's all dead. His name was Bob Chandler from Chinook, Kansas. He was wounded when LZ St. George got overrun.
It started when two soldiers played a game of quick draw.
And the guy shot the other guy right through the chest. I was standing right there in chow line, saw the whole thing. But anyway, we had a new company commander. He gave orders there'd be no loaded weapons in the perimeter. So I was squad leader, and I had my M60 machine gun at my position loaded with like 2,000 rounds of ammo on it, a spare barrel, asbestos gloves, ready to rock and roll. And he came around, and he says, "Who's in charge?" And I says, "I am, sir." And he says, "I gave direct orders, no loaded weapons." And I said, "Sir, you can court-martial me, but I'm not going to let you kill me." He said, "The time it takes to load that weapon may be the time it takes you to lose your life." So anyway, I was relieved of squad leader, and I got moved to a different place on the perimeter. 3 or 4 days later, we got overrun by the 33rd and 66th North Vietnamese Regiments. They wiped the whole second platoon out. 30-some-odd guys were killed. So I come in that morning, and there was all these wounded guys, guys with body bags, and I saw Bob Chandler, and he says, "Man," I says, "what happened?" He says, "We got overrun last night." He says, "If that machine gun was not loaded," he says, "well, I wouldn't be here right now." He said, "You saved the whole platoon."
We flip to an image of a few young men goofing off in a swimming pool, flashing a peace sign.
That's me.
Peace sign.
Yeah, that's what we went on convoys, that's what we always did, everyone gave peace signs.
Peace signs.
See, they had a swimming pool in the rear in Pleiku, so the only way you could get there was if you got wounded or if you got sick. See, there's the pool.
So did you sneak in? It doesn't look
no,
like you're wounded.
I got a fever of unknown origin. I think it was dengue fever is what it was.
Okay.
Vietnam, there was two Vietnams. The rear guys had it made. They had stuff like this, and they had clubs to go to and stuff. And the guys out in the bush, it was jungle.
More photos of young men smiling flick by.
Dan Jarecki, that's his name. Dan Jarecki, and he was making a beer cooler. See, that was a hand grenade box,
okay.
And we'd line it with plastic. And then at night, we'd sneak into the cook tent, steal some ice, and we'd ice our beer down. In the 4th Infantry Division, you were issued 2 beers and 1 Coke a day. So if you went out on a 30-day operation, when you came in, you got 60 beers and 30 Cokes, and you only had like 5 or 6 days to drink them. And you could trade your Coke for beer from guys that didn't drink. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we'd buy weed. Like, pot was like $20 for a kilo. We would get wasted.
Those were the extremes then, he seems to be saying. I've forgotten we're on an airplane surrounded by strangers. I've forgotten even that we're strangers. Kevin says Vietnam forced him to take each day as his last to look out for the fun in life, like a party in the middle of a war. He travels North America on a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, and that's how he knows people on Gabriola Island, including a Canadian Vietnam veteran who Kevin says isn't doing so well, suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. On November 11th, Kevin will be at a ceremony on Gabriola Island, or maybe in Nanaimo, where he knows another veteran. When we get off the plane in Vancouver, we're laughing. That's the shortest 5-hour flight I've ever been on, he tells me, and I have to agree.
Rosemary Westwood in conversation with U.S. Vietnam War veteran Kevin Welch. And we'll have some of the photos from that slideshow on our Facebook page. Just to search for On the Island. It's facebook.com/CBC On the Island.